this is Renee.
And I'm Devin.
And we're from Midnight Eclipse. Go check out our website at
www.midnighteclipse.net.pc.
Ask us a question, become a boardie,
and check out our awesome giveaways.
Midnighteclipse.net.pc.
We'll see you sooner than you think.
Friends, do you ever wonder, who am I? Why am I here? What is the meaning of life? Why do I keep repeating the same patterns, and how can I change them? Why am I free from being able to have the life that I've always dreamed of, and what is stopping me from having this? How do I meditate? What is an aura, and how do I see one? How can I come to a sense of well-being physically and spiritually always? How can I remain in a state of absolute love, that soulful love, felt and expressed from within the heart of the soul, or we may say unconditional love, bliss, peace, and spiritual oneness in life continuously? Dr. Patty Diamond, Lady Diamond, in co-creation with Spirit, shows you the path through the new book called Stepping into Spiritual Oneness, Spiritual Rememberings of the Soul Through Life Experience, available at Diamond Lady Publishing, www.diamondladypublishing.net.
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
An incurable optimist at heart, Marshall is in it for the species. His mission is to help others become self-informed about future catastrophic threats. He also believes that men and women must face the next global catastrophe as co-equals, and advocates a service-to-others approach to survival. The website is Marshall Masters, MARSHALLMasters.com, and Ghostly Talk would like to welcome to the show Marshall Masters. Welcome to Ghostly Talk.
It's a pleasure to be here, gentlemen.
And as you guys can hear, this is...
Sounds like he's in studio.
We've had people on Skype before, but you see, this is one thing you guys can't get out there in radio land that we're really enjoying right now. Is that Marshall is on video right now. We're kind of like looking at him as we're speaking. This is almost a two-way conversation we're having, like a real one. We're like...
Thank God he can't see us.
We intentionally do not have a webcam here, Marshall, because
it's ugly in here.
Okay. The bio says it speaks for itself, and I always like talking to people that are optimistic at heart, because me, myself, oh boy, I got some real problems here. Maybe you can help me here tonight, Marshall.
Be glad to.
One of the things we were going to start out talking, and this has been, now there's been some talk of this new planet. I haven't really read any of the reports yet, but I've heard the buzz around. There's a new planet they found, I think. It's like 10 trillion miles away or some ridiculous astronomical number. But there was one before that, though, people talked about a lot. This has been going on for a number of years.
Oh, definitely.
And that is Planet X. This
it's
is a planet.
It's all one and the same, fellas.
It's all
you've heard of Nibiru, you know, with Zachariah Sitchin.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Planet X. There's also other names for it that come from ancient folklore, such as the Destroyer, the Frightener, and the Red Comet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been documented in many cultures. And this is really something that's been going on for a long time in the modern sense. It started about 150 years ago with the fellow by the name of John Couch Adams. He was a mathematician in England, a rather brilliant young fellow, and was trying to figure out what was causing the perturbations in the orbit of Uranus. And, well, that set off a whole series of scientific examinations, which actually led up to the discovery of Pluto, which was just recently demoted to a dwarf planet, you know.
Yeah.
Fame is so fleeting. And
can you imagine being a planet for so long, and then all of a sudden they say, well, you know, your qualifications.
Sorry, yeah. You know, we're
sensitive to these issues. Darn
no,
us.
No, definitely not.
And so what's been happening with Planet X research, and the way I got into this was the way most folks get into things. You know, you walk backwards right into it. And it started in in the 90s. I had a travel business in Russia, and I was taking the polar route during the winters to do my inspections, coming back and forth on Aeroflotsky, and I was watching the ice cap. and always going the same time of year. And the very first trip I took, it was this beautiful, pristine snow and ice. It was just stunning. And then I watched it progressively degrade until finally on my last trip in 98, it looked like a busted windshield. And I'm going, hey, I don't care what the debate is. I'm seeing it happening. Mm-hmm. Global warming exists.
Mm-hmm.
And we started researching it. And what we did was I got together with some other writers, and we were, you know, we're not elbowing up at any feeding trough. So we don't have any golden cows to defend.
Mm-hmm.
And what we quickly did was we abandoned this Earth-centric view where everything's, you know, it's kind of like Las Vegas. You go there, it stays there. And that's the way we've looked at global warming. That and also what I call sacrifice the virgin. You know, after the event happens and sacrifice the virgin, everybody goes back to business. The priests stay in power. The families are kind of brokenhearted, tough on the virgins.
yes, it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we just said, hey, let's just back away from all of this old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we started saying, well, what's happening in the rest of the solar system, which is a natural question. All of a sudden, boom, you find out all the other planets in our solar system are perturbed. We're seeing Mars is having global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have, if we had it to this degree on Earth, we're talking extinction level event. It's that bad.
Oh my God.
Pluto had global warming. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And which was completely amazing. Well, as a matter of fact, what's happening is the sun is getting excited because there's an object coming into the solar system. And one of the interesting harbinger signs that will come of this later on in a few years is that they're going to report that water is running on Mars, because what will happen is the sun is going to become so active that radiation is going to get down into the crust of the planet and free up that water that's trapped on Mars. So when we see that happening, then we're in its deep guacamole time.
And,
or as they say in Star Trek, serious poodoo.
Well, I've heard of this. I mean, obviously, you're talking about Mars and that there's water on Mars. They have discovered the dry ice aspect. That was like the last mission. It was a couple of missions ago, I think, or something
mm-hmm.
like that. I don't follow my NASA stuff too much. But
right, and now they see the trails and stuff like that.
Those could be created by water.
What I've heard a lot about Planet X and things like that, but I didn't follow the – I have to admit, a little bit bored about the, you know, the ancient Babylonian issues and things like that where they say, oh, this was, you know, a species of people live on this planet and then they created us and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I didn't get into that much. But I do know that if a planet were to wander through our solar system right now, mm-hmm. that's a major thing. That's got some major –
that's going to shut the works down, I think.
Well, like it's got major gravity, and it's got major, you know, it's going to really affect
everything
in the solar system. Has it visited before, Marshall? Has it been around before?
Yes, it's been documented. We publish a book called The Colburn Bible. It dates back 3,600 years, and this book is written in two parts. First part was written by the ancient Egyptians after the Exodus, which the Egyptians claim that the Exodus was actually caused by a previous flyby of this planet, as well as the Great Deluge, which happened before that. Those were the last two flybys of Planet X Nibiru. When we use the term Planet X, we're really, it is encompassing a wide range of things. There's a lot of confusion from the different names. And so, you know, it's, just think of Planet X as being a generic name for all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so they told us that it's also documented in the ancient Celtic folklore that's in the book, which was written just after the death of Jesus. And the Celts called it the Frightener. The Egyptians called it the Destroyer. They prophesized that it would happen in our time. And they gave us very specific harbinger signs, one of the which was they predicted the rise of radical Islam. They said a religion practicing, preaching peace, promising peace, would go into the four corners of the earth bringing war. That's Islam. And
sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sounds familiar. Yeah, it rings a bell.
I see it on the news all the time.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And, we're back to sensibilities. Okay, we can pick on Mars, though. It's easier.
So far, it has not ever published a position paper. So.
Yeah,
that's right. And Mars is not going to walk into a restaurant and blow itself up.
Right.
So, definite advantages there. Mm. And what we're seeing are these, what we found in our research as we started looking at all of this, was we wanted to know what's driving the sun, because the sun's really in a frenzy. And what we found in our research is that the principal cause right now of global warming is solar activity, and that doing is making things worse. And actually, what we're, from one standpoint, if you have a really good volcanic eruption, I mean, that can put up a lot more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere than we can. But what we're doing, which is really awful with our planet, is that we're taking the elasticity out of our biosphere. And our oceans are not able to absorb carbon like they did, because we're polluting the oceans. We have affecting plankton, large species of fish. We're overfishing. We have complete dead zones in our oceans, where nothing will grow all year round, or at certain times, whales beaching and it's a mystery to us. And part and parcel of all of this is that we're taking away the planet's ability to absorb these shocks, this coming activity, which can be, in a worst case scenario, another deluge, which, according to the Colburn Bible, accompanied an Edgar Cayce-type pole shift. What the Egyptians reported was that during the Great Deluge, after it was over, the stars had shifted in the sky, which is obviously a pole shift.
Mm.
And that's something to keep in mind, because half of Cayce's pole shift prophecy did come to pass. He said that we would see a major deformation of the Earth in 1998. And it was actually, I think, in 2001 or 2002, those fringe lunatic idiots at NASA.
That's why I don't follow their stuff either, Marshall.
I love doing that. I can pick up stuff like Mars, too, you know? It's bring it home, baby. And
I love it.
So what they found was with satellites was that we have this equatorial bulge that's getting progressively larger, because, according to NASA, we have water that's moving from the moderate latitudes towards the equator.
That's what I keep telling people about. That's what I keep telling people about myself. I just have fluids that's moving from the extremity to my middle, and that's why I keep having to buy new belts. But
that's right.
And they don't work.
And they don't
work.
That's right. Yeah, they.
That's right.
There's nothing to rest on them anymore. But yes, I do see. Yeah. So the water is causing an equatorial bulge, right?
That's right. That's right. And we could dump 50 trillion tons of hoodia in the ocean and it ain't going to stop.
Nope.
And so that's what's going on. Yeah, everything actually is also fitting in perfectly with the Mayan calendar.
Edgar Cayce also, didn't he also say that the poles would shift, of course, and it would be, his predictors of it were, he had several different predictors, but mostly they were the Earth changes and huge Earth changes. I've seen huge Earth changes, yes, but I don't know, because I can only remember one lifetime and that's the current one. And it doesn't include, larger Earth changes. So, yes, I do know that we've had, we had a huge string of hurricanes. We've had the tsunami just a year or two ago. We had Mount St. Helens, is
gurgling
up
and belching.
Again.
And stuff,
it acted up when I was a kid, and it's been acting up again.
It's been belching.
We've got Yellowstone, Yellowstone?
Old Faithful.
Yellowstone is it's on red alert.
It's
and
going,
it hasn't come up.
Yeah, absolutely going bonkers and acting up. Mm-hmm. I mean, just acting up in general. Sometimes the, you know, one of the ponds there will be just boiling and sometimes not. And it's like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, what's going on?
The earth needs work? To be grounded.
Yeah, it does. The earth is going through a fit. So I've seen that. But I can imagine this kind of thing happening normally. So how do I know what's abnormal? What makes these abnormal?
Frequency, intensity, and change of behavior. Good example. We're working on a book right now. We're going to bring it out this summer called Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. One of the things we point out there, and we instruct people on how to do their own research. Well, we've been doing this since 1999, and so trying to get people up to that kind of up to speed that way from that standpoint is not practical. We distilled it into things that you can just sit there and watch the news on TV and find the news inside the news. Now, in 1999, for example, there were two storms that hit Europe. And these storms, it was Lothar and Martin. They were very unusual. They formed the same way hurricanes do that hit us here in the States. And as you know, with hurricanes, when they make landfall, they start sputtering out. They lose energy. Mm-hmm. Lothar and Martin gained energy when they made landfall. Both storms. And one went up through northern France. The other one went through southern France. And, I mean, the damage was huge, and those hundreds and hundreds of lives lost. It was catastrophic, and it wasn't well reported here in the United States. We get, you know, oh, it was just a really bad storm in Europe. You know, and let's move on.
That's pretty much what we get out of all of Europe. Oh, they're all fighting over there again, you know.
They're all fighting over there, yeah. Yes. You know, it's the news seems to be dominated, unfortunately, by unfortunately dead, attractive white females these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
quite often.
That's where it's at.
I have never heard it put that way, and that is so true, Marshall. God, you just nailed it.
Yeah, right. That's it. That's what we got there. And I find that to be disheartening. Tragic for the people, but it, you know, 24/7, it gets a little bit. And we don't need 24/7 autopsy reports. We really need to know what's happening with the rest of the world, but that's also part and parcel what's happening with the media. The mainstream media is corporate media now because it's all been consolidated. And, yes, is there freedom of the press? Absolutely. They can talk 24/7 about unfortunately dead attractive white females because they are just money machines. Mm-hmm. They sell advertising. It's base. People come, and they don't have to pay to do research, all right, like they do with normal news coverage. Gumsole budgets, if you will, have disappeared. And then once topics get to a higher level of urgency, especially ones that can affect the profitability of advertisers or fellow corporations or other corporate allegiances, then what happens is that there's a pressure to say, well, we're going to report this in a certain way or we're not going to report it at all. And we have seen with the consolidation of the major media, that has been a general trend. It's not a reflection in my mind on the reporters. I think the reporters really do want to do their job, but they got to pay mortgages. Mm-hmm. And that's what it really comes down to. So for the rest of us, if we've got to glean what we can from the media and from the internet, from all the different information sources. But the key thing you have to do in the years between now and 2012 is you have to start looking for anomalous behaviors. You know, when you see the experts get on TV and they scratch their head and they go, God, who'd have thunk that, you know?
Yeah, we didn't see that coming. You know?
You know, how can you explain the fact that you predicted a violent hurricane season and nothing happened, like it was a total non-event? I don't know. Who'd have thunk it?
Well, I thought there were meteorologists put in place to do this future forecasting job, and that's an interesting point you make, Marshall, because they do say things, well, we don't know how this came. We don't know.
That's right. But you know that's a big step up. because there was a time when they had an explanation for everything.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
True or not.
But what's interesting...
Poseidon was angry with us.
Yeah. That was the explanation.
No, there we go. No. Any virgins in the room?
No, there's not.
That's my religion talk right there. Yeah. You know, the Poseidon was angry with it. You're right.
Poseidon angry.
There was a time, Marshall, where, yeah, they did have an explanation for everything. that was the explanation right there. Poseidon mm-hmm. was angry with us. At least we're a little more scientific now. I guess we do have to give them credit.
Well, science today is also a lot about people. They're defenders of dogma many times because they go out and they have a position that they've taken and they have to defend it because it's the source of their funding.
Mm-hmm.
So when another idea comes out to counter that, then they get their hackles up. You know, for example, Darwin. We wouldn't even known about Darwin if he hadn't simply circumvented the entire peer process altogether and published directly. He had a scientific journal publisher who said, hey, we put this up for peer review. It'll get cut to pieces. You're not going to get past it.
Mm.
So we're just going to go forget the peer review. We're going to go straight to the press. And so now all of a sudden, now everybody's studying Darwin.
The same thing with Galileo. He was just unexcommunicated about, 15 years ago.
Mm.
So they had just excommunicated him, and nobody would talk to him.
Well, Marshall, you're completely right about that, because we've had guest after guest on this show, and we've all kind of, and you kind of really put it, you know, kind of gave it some, get fleshed it out a lot, I think, because there are people, a lot of scientists out there, they're doing great work. I think the work is awesome, but when they're contested, that's when it starts to get ugly. I can name, you know, name after name here. And the bottom line you said, Marshall, is that, yeah, the reason they do this is it's the source of their funding.
Right.
They have mortgages to pay, too.
But what happens is, then, there's folks like you, Marshall, and your posse, right?
Right.
You guys all got together and said, hey, we're noticing this stuff. So how did you determine that, okay, you know what, it's just, because evidently at some point you decided it's not going to work to go do the, you know, speak in front of Congress, speak in front of the UN, speak mm-hmm. in front of various congressional, you know, throughout the world. That's not going to work. So what we're going to do is we're going to publish and we're going to let people know this,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to mm-hmm. you know, do the circuit and promote the books and say, hey, there's something coming up you got to watch out for. And so you guys decided to go that route directly to the people. Instead
right.
of through the leaders.
I think a lot of people are doing that now. A lot of publishers,
right. I have
independent
seen that.
Publishers are doing that now.
I have seen that, definitely. Yeah. How did right. you come about that decision? Because you could have stood up on your own and said, maybe we should wait until after the break.
Why don't we do that?
Sounds like a lengthy...
why don't we do that? Well, I want to talk more about 2012, too.
And I want to talk about 2012.
Let's take
By the way, we call ourselves the Hole in the Internet Gang.
The Hole in the Internet Gang.
All right. A busy man, Marshall Masters, is, obviously.
While we're on break, visit marshallmasters.com. Yeah. M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, masters.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also Yowza.com, YOWUSA.com.
Oh, yeah, YOWUSA.com as well.
Check that out. Guys, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back.
Buddha, Vishnu, the Dalai Lama, Isis, Baal. What do all of these ancient gods have in common with each other? They're all going down. World of the Unexplained, conservative paranormal talk, big on God, big on guns, our God can beat up your God.
Drop the switchboard. Such a beautiful face.
Shaking this ball, and all I get is the number 8. Where's the snow? I told my psychic I wanted to know if I was going to win the lottery, and she asked me for the numbers. The death card keeps showing up in this deck. Maybe I should get a reflector on my scooter. I keep dreaming about frogs leaping into my bed. This book says I'm just horny. Having a bad day at the Wheel of Fortune? KarmaCast has answers. Check out KarmaCast.com for show listings and times. KarmaCast.com is a division of Mayhem Media.
System here was really effective.
I like that new intercom we got.
The intercom system sounded a lot like how we describe each other.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it's it worked though.
It worked.
I don't know what happened.
The first time, apparently, you had it too low. He didn't hear it.
I had to turn the volume up a little bit.
And it worked. It worked. As a matter of fact, it kicked two people into gear.
Oh, wow. That's powerful.
Yeah, you turn it up.
Those are the wonderful things you people out there in podcast/radio/internet/FM/AM/what else is there?
Everything
land and not here. That's all the fun stuff we do on break.
We're talking with Marshall Masters of MarshallMasters.com.
What was that other website, Marshall?
YOWUSA.com.
Excellent. Before a break, you had something you wanted to talk to him about. I'm like melting down as we speak, so I'm trying to stay with this.
When you realize something, Marshall, you realize something and you go, this is big. This is, this affects every single person on the planet, and it does. This affects, it's even being talked about, on the news in the big media, but of course, with different agendas. But what happens is you realize that this is big, you and your friends, and you decided to go the publication. You're like, that's it. We're going to write it all down. We're going to put out some books on this.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're doing, you guys do some hard research and gather the stuff and you're putting it together in books and sending it out to people when they order it. Why did you do that way? Because there are other ways of doing it, but you seem to like you said with Darwin, go directly to the people. And that's what you're doing. And what made you choose that route?
Well, we wanted the freedom to do our research without having to elbow in at a feeding trough to have anyone telling us what to do or how to do it. First and foremost, we have a core mission, which is to understand this and then to share that with people in a public information mode. And what we find with Yowza is that folks find us. Our site has been growing in popularity, and one of the things we hear so often is the same thing from other folks, that they really appreciate our straightforward manner in which we're looking at this. We're not trying to do woo-woo entertainment.
Because that's what gets shoved down our throats daily.
Yeah, that's right. They hear the woo-woo stuff, and I will tell you that people haven't necessarily been always eager to hear this information. I mean, this is really not, you know, like how to win the lottery stuff, right?
Right.
Or this is the mother of all lotteries you don't. You know, to give you an idea of this, we started writing our first article, I think it was in 2002 on it. And after we started getting into it, there was a 2003 scare with Mark Hazelwood and Zeta Talk. And this Hazelwood fellow, he was a plagiarist. He stole a lot of content from Zeta Talk site, which is channeling extraterrestrials. And they were predicting that Nibiru would appear in May or June of 2003, and that would be it. Game over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we would all be in deep poodoo. So the poodoo alert went out, and it caused a tremendous amount of hysteria and panic out there, and we were having huge volumes of traffic to the site. It was nothing like it ever in the history of the site, and people were just coming in, and they were frantic, and we were getting letters from people, and they were just pulling their hair out, do I sell the house? And we're looking at this, we know something's coming, but the timing is wrong, and we really felt sorry for all these people, and the interest in the whole topic really collapsed after that for a while. We wrote an article, Jacko van der Warp wrote an article, Is It Time to Revisit Nibiru? We published that in August of 2003. In that entire month, aside from ourselves, four people read the article, okay? Interest was really flatline, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, bag them and tag them, folks. Out of here. And what we found was that we stayed with it. We diversified into some other areas, explored some other things, but kept doing our research. And now what's happening is it's coming back. And on our site, we have a Planet X forecast. It's a slide series of about, I think, 7 or 8 illustrations we've done with plots that actually show the location of Planet X in relationship to our solar system now through 2013, and in general, high-level view of what to expect in terms of the Earth catastrophes that will attend that. Well, since we put that up, it's had, I think, nearly 60,000 downloads.
Wow.
Awesome.
So here we go. We have an article that, you know, gets 4 reads. Now we have a PDF which has 60,000 downloads. And so what we're really doing is it's telling us that not only are more people interested in this, but it's also evolved a little further down the road. Instead of people going, well, gee, you know, it's entertaining, it's woo-woo, it's great for listening to coast, you know, and eating popcorn and going, oh, do you think it's going to really happen, you know? And everything going on like that. And he's like, I'm scared. Are you scared? Yeah, oh, we're scared. It's fun. No. Those days are kind of fading away, and people are going, okay, yeah, am I nuts? Am I seeing what I'm seeing, and does it make sense? And that's where more people are right now, is they're asking themselves, am I nuts? Am I seeing what I'm seeing? And this is the second stage of this process. And we see, that's what we see. Books that are coming out now reflect that, where people are on one side, they're really having problems. They're interested. They're in denial. They're scared to death that it's going to rip the blinders off their head, and then that's it. There's no going back. And then you have other people that are wondering, am I nuts? And then you have a growing minority, and they're going, all right, time to do something about it. Am I just going to sit here and be sheeple, or am I going to take risks for families and practical things? You know, it's not like saying, well, move to the Appalachian Mountains or Sierra Nevadas, and that's all you need to do. It's like, hot, dumb. Dumb, you don't tell people to do something like that, because what you're saying is go uproot your family, uproot your job, uproot your life, leave everything behind, and go work in McDonald's in the Appalachians, okay? It's like, you know, that's a born dead message, right? On the other hand, if you're saying, okay, stay where you're at, but you have a plan B, and that's really what we're aiming at, is to give people that plan B and to help them get through this thing. In terms of how it's eventually going to all work out, is it's not going to be one thing that we have to be concerned with. And it's not all going to happen on one day. This is going to be a convergence of events. And it's going to be a slow motion train wreck that's going to take several years. It's going to be a really painful process. And that's the sobering part of it. But, you know, it's like dealing with cancer. If the doctor just walks in, sits down, and says, we found a tumor, now we've got to do something about it, you appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if he sits down, pats you on the arm, and he goes, how's the weather? You see the test results in his hands, and he's asking you about the weather. You know, it's like, deep poo-doo. Yeah. So,
again.
Yeah, we see people now evolving to that point. And so by virtue of the course that we took, which was really, yes, I mean, if I had gone the entertainment route, we could have made this a very entertaining topic. And I do joke about it because I think humor is an important survival tool, okay?
Absolutely.
So, absolutely. You know, it's like if
it's healthy.
Talking,
it's healthy.
It's healthy. It gets you through it. You know, it's like, if the volcanoes don't get us, the cow farts will. So, you know, you deal with that, and that's an important thing, and it's a human thing. But also, the thing that's, for me, it's an important message to get to people, is that this is not a cataclysm. This is an evolutionary event. Because every time one of these things has happened, we've evolved through it. In some way, we have become better as a species. And so I view this not so much in the biblical, catastrophic, God judging us thing, but I see it more like the butterfly emerging out of a chrysalis.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into the chrysalis is not fun. You
right.
and getting out either is a little rough. But it is a chrysalis kind of event. And so it's important for people to take that into perspective, because we're going to see a noble side of ourselves in this that's going to inspire us.
As it's happened in the past, how have the survivors? Because there's going to be some cataclysms that will cause, some events are going to cause, you know, people are being in the wrong place at the wrong time, that kind of thing.
Well, we just had one recently, and that may not tie very closely. But look how, I mean, the recent event I'm referring to is the Virginia Tech thing, all right? This is far off, but look how many people have pulled together as a result of that.
Well, that's true. So what happens to the survivors? How do they...
We lost Marshall.
We lost him?
Oh, no.
We'll bring him back on. Hang on. We'll get him back on. But no, as far as an example is concerned right there, that's a great example. I mean, I've been looking around at people, and I don't want to get too much into this, but we've had conversations. We've talked to people. We've done this. And I see people, everybody's pulling together. I mean, what was it, the 20th of April, we were all Hokies, for example. We were all Hokies that day. We all agreed to be Hokies that day. It's that stuff that, you know, but the unfortunate thing I think is that it takes something that horrible for us to all pull together like that.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that really kind of disturbs me, is that it takes something that horrendous for us to all pull together. It bothers me that it takes those things.
Right.
Why can't we just do that normally?
These events, though, are going to be non-human proliferated. I mean,
well, yeah, these are on a much larger scale. But something, I think it's good to start off on something like that and go, okay, you know, This is what we do for something this small. What are we going to do when something really big comes through?
Right.
Oh,
it's ringing.
It's ringing. It's ringing.
I like to hear that.
Marshall.
Yeah, we lost our internet connection on this end.
Yeah, on your end.
Oh, we were thinking it was our. We were thinking it was our end.
We thought it was our fault.
No, it's on my end. It was on my end. I guess those guys stopped eating donuts and finally woke up and did something about it.
Well, we're glad we got you back. Because we were talking while we were trying to get you back on the line.
This is going to be obviously bigger than the Virginia Tech thing, because this could affect these are things
they're on a magnificent scale
of solar flares and earthquakes, and when poles shift, it just isn't pretty, and so there are going to be some people who suffer through that or don't make it through, but the individual little events that occur of that. But what about the other people? When it's all said and done, but while it's happening and after it's done, finally,
mm-hmm.
How do people people are going to change because of this?
Absolutely,
this is a global. A global
cataclysmic thing.
Yeah. So how are people going to change? Do you predict?
Well, we already have, we have examples from the past, and I think the most recent we can look at is World War II. And a lot of folks don't realize is that the time in which Shakespeare was read by more Londoners than ever in the history of the British Isles was during the Blitz of London. And when the bombs were falling on Londoners, they weren't reading the dime store novels. Jackie Collins was not not what they wanted at that point. When death is knocking at your door, you want something that talks to what's really, the human experience of facing a massive challenge and of getting beyond that challenge. And so they did that. And that generation was... it was a selfless generation. People really sacrificed for others. And so we rise to that level. What I see happening is that right now we have a lot of those that have the power and understand what's happening. And these are the people that really are above the levels of power that are visible to us. What they're really doing is moving and positioning themselves so that they continue holding that power through this event. I believe that the event could very well be something that exceeds that capability. And, so it's really going to boil down to people who are going to pull together and form small communities. It's going to change the dynamic. It's going to be a time when a 60-year-old grandmother who knows how to grow herbs and has a green thumb is going to be worth 10 lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
What's going to happen, I think, is
we're
going to have something that's going to basically – what you just said right there is it's going to level the playing field for a lot of people, I think. Right now we have people, I think, that are being held down because, they, like you just said, a woman with a green thumb, a 60-year-old grandmother who is in her golden years, this is the retiring years, she is going to be worth 10 lawyers, like you said. That's going to be high demand. That's going to be high demand right now for someone like that, because we're going to need someone like that in the future, I think, when these things happen.
Right. We're going to do that. We're going to this is going to be a huge shift philosophically for us between service to self and service to others. And service to others means that you place your survival on par with humanity's survival. And we genuinely, it is a personification, if you will, of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Mm.
And we're really going to, this whole issue of us being, it's about me, 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 this nihilistic society, consumer society.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very fragile society. What we have to understand is that one of the first things that's going to happen in the coming years is it's going to impact the oil distribution network.
Thank God.
Their ability to find oil.
Thank God, Marshall. I hope it does. That's one thing I hope. I mean, the bad things happen. I think that would be actually be a good thing, to tell you the truth.
Well, it could be a good thing, but on the other hand, it could be a rather painful thing. And the reason why is that next time you go to McDonald's and they say supersize a fryer, what you have to remember is for every calorie that's in that those potatoes, it took about 10 calories of petrochemical to get it there. And we are very dependent on petroleum. If our petroleum infrastructure is really heavily impacted, let's say it went together, all of it just disappeared one day. We have a planet right now that is so degraded it could only support about 1.5 to 2 billion humans without us having this green revolution that was brought on by the use of petroleum, you know, with fertilizers and fuels and trucking and what happened. You know, it's like, think about it. 100 years ago, they didn't get to eat truck-ripened fruit. And
this is true.
So,
this is true.
Yeah, so if you were saying there's a difference of about, say, 4 billion, you lose half your oil capacity right there, you're talking a third of the population.
Oh, my God. And
so this, we have a very, the world that we have, we're very dependent on technology. And yes, we're very, we have a lot of ability. And yes, by golly, you know, we're like the Marines, the impossible just a little longer. But you can't take systems that have, you know, taken us 150 years to get to this point in the oil epoch, to where we're at, specifically what we're going to do, something completely different in 15 months. You just simply shift gears that way. And we'll see those kinds of impacts happening. But I think the key thing is that after all is said and done, people are going to stand up and they're going to say, well, why didn't we really see this coming? Most people aren't going to see it coming until it's too late. And they're going to...
Marshall, do you think that's just a? I mean, I think people see this coming. I think people on high levels do see this coming. I think it's short-sightedness. I preach that every single week. It seems like here it's short-sightedness. People saying, "Well, yeah, I know there's a problem that's going to be in the future as a result of my actions right now, but it's making me well right now. We'll deal with that when it comes." Obviously, that's an insane way to look at things. But it seems like I always say people think about as far as their nose comes off their face. It seems like that's about as far out as they look. It seems like that's what people seem to be getting into with these things. I don't want to go like, what's all the fat cat high, people up in the top that are making these millions. But really, when it comes down to it, they're the ones that make the decisions ultimately with these things. So
they know what's happening. I mean, let me just tell you. You know, we follow the money. All right. A lot of people kind of to get this information, they channel aliens or they come up, they invent completely new mathematics that you can't understand. We just follow the money. And when we follow the money, what we're seeing, for example, is that, this year, the South Pole Telescope became operational. And if there's a perfect device to be the perfect place to see something coming in from the south, which is what we expect Planet X to be, and what we're saying right now is that Planet X is going to most likely be a brown dwarf, which is a ruddy cinder in the sky. It's a sun that'll be larger than Jupiter but didn't have the mass to sustain a solar furnace like our sun. And so it's just on a slow burn. And what science is finding as a result of the fact that there is a phenomenal amount of research right now, tremendous amount of work being reported on brown dwarfs, we're finding that brown dwarfs are most likely the most common type of star in the universe, more of them than anything else. We know that only a small percentage of systems have only one sun. What we're seeing is, what we believe is that Planet X or Nibiru, what have you, could very well be a companion to our own sun, which explains things. You know, like we have a precession of the equinox, which we're going backwards through the signs of the zodiac, and not only are we going backwards through the zodiac to the age of Aquarius, but we're going at an ever-increasing rate of speed. And so the question is, if we're living in a solar system with one sun, well, how does that work? Mm-hmm. If you have one sun, it's just going to, why wouldn't it be stable? Well, there's something out there perturbing things. And that's what we really found in the research, is that there's this disturbance. And the other, but the big threat to us by this object is not the object itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's the interaction between this incoming object and our sun. It's making the sun more intense. And we're passing through, and as a convergence, we're passing through the galactic rift, the densest part, the densest plane, if you will, of our galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
This part in the galaxy is where suns, the red giants, tend to supernova more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dusty area of space. We're passing through debris bubbles. But also there's a lot of physicists right now that are talking about the possibility of a super wave event that would come from the core of the system that could be in our way. So there's like a convergence of things, but what we find is that the Mayans were, on one hand, the Mayans were talking about this as a spiritual event, which is the other side of the coin. You know, and then you go back to the other side of the coin, the other first side of the coin, you're talking about an astronomical event. And they pegged it pretty well. There's some very interesting alignments that are happening here, where we're at in relationship to the galaxy, what's happening with our sun. And when our sun gets excited about all this, that puts us in the toaster oven of life. And what we really have to worry about. And that's why our governments, Japan, Europe, and the United States, have just launched a crash program to put solar observatories into space. Now, since 95, SOHO. SOHO is, it's a reliable old bird. It's a satellite that's like, they ought to call it, instead of SOHO, they ought to call it Timex, because it keeps taking a licking and keeps on ticking, you know?
Hey, Marshall, yeah. We really don't want me to cut you off, but we are at 8 o'clock. We're at the top of the hour, and we do have to go to break, and we have to get our other guest, Rick Hayes, on, unfortunately.
I have to say, though.
You know, we talked about this before the show, Marshall. I said we have guests that come on over and over again because we are just so fascinated with the work that they're doing. And I knew coming
this
into this
is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to direct folks to www.youwusa.com.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up these things. You've got the Colburn Bible, you've got the upcoming book on 2012, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and they can download the graphics on it for free now.
And you can go get the graphics already.
Yes.
And of course, visit marshallmasters.com, but youwusa.com.
Definitely.
That's where the articles are. That's where the, you know, it took shape.
Marshall, we can't thank you enough for coming
this
on.
This has been a fascinating.
And putting up with all the crazy stuff going on in the studio tonight.
Fascinating.
We would
hour.
Love to have you come back on the show again. Please, we'd love to have you come back on and talk about this stuff.
Love to come back, guys.
I think we have a lot more.
You're a fun crowd.
Thank you.
Good to hear that. Marshall, please stay on the line. We're just going to go to break here. Hang on for 1 second, all right?
Okay.
Guys, this is Ghostly Talk. Woo! Things are good. We finally got the feed stabilized now,
the feed
finally.
The feed seems stable. We're going to keep our fingers crossed.
We're going to keep an eye on it. But coming up, oh boy, our
I'm
dear friend.
I'm excited about this
Our
one.
Dear
this
friend.
This one's awesome.
Rick Hayes.
I love Rick.
Rick Hayes of LifeSgift.com.
Been seeing a lot of this gentleman at conferences, and it's great. We're always excited to talk
he's
to Rick.
He's getting out there. He's talking to people. He's people. And
like
that's
Marshall.
The kind of people that I like.
Thank you, Marshall, again. Guys,
thanks,
this is
Marshall
Ghostly
again.
Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back after this.
For more information, visit ghostlytalk.com.